Welcome, welcome, welcome to Mom Lives and Gifted. I am your host, Tamia. Hey, it's been a while if you are used to listening to my podcast. And if you're new here, well, welcome. I'm glad you came across my podcast. Welcome to the new year. Welcome to Long-Winded and Gifted. Just a little bit about me. This podcast is birthed out of me talking. I'm a talker. And that's why it's Long-Winded and Gifted. That's where it started. It's a podcast all about family, faith, love, trending topics, things that can be moments for us to talk about and learn and grow. And so that's what I'm all about here. I think more knowledge and is well-versed in the idea of family and parenting and relationships. I have been in an 18-year relationship, married 13 years this year. And so I really speak to that place. We've been through a lot. So I think I have a lot to offer. And in light of marriage, that's what I wanted to talk about tonight, which was the current season of Married at First Sight. If you aren't familiar with it, basically, it takes couples, matchmakers match these couples and they get married at first sight. So they don't ever see each other before getting married. They don't ever speak to each other before getting married. And I've watched this show for a really long time, and I watched it for a really long time, and it's definitely entertainment. I think these last two seasons or the last three seasons, I've kind of come to the conclusion this really is a bad idea. Like, it's really just a bad idea. Simply because marriage takes work and it takes commitment, and it's very hard to commit to something you don't believe in. It's very hard to commit to someone that you just don't know at the end of the day. And so that's why it's very dangerous if they don't click, if they don't work, to legally bind these people to a marriage. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. I guess I can kind of say that I love the idea that they're married. And so that's something that I firmly believe in as, like I said, a wife of 13 years and a spiritual person, a woman of faith, a Christian woman. I believe in the power of marriage, but this just it takes a level of commitment and a level of faith to say, I'm going to stay in this thing regardless of where it goes. And when you don't know a person, it is very hard to do that. So I want to jump right in. There are five couples this season. I am up to episode 8, and I believe that is the most current episode. And I must say, I want to talk about first Gina and Clint. So Gina is a hairstylist, a salon owner, and Clint is just, he's in the tech world, I believe, but he is a traveler, a well-traveled man. He is a man of leisure almost. He spends most of his time sailing because he is an eighth generation sailor. So the reason they were matched was because they felt Clint could give Gina something that or introduce her to something that she's not normally used to, which is things outside of work and her salon and the things, right? So, mind you, like I said, they get married at first sight without ever seeing each other. And so I think we have to address the fact that no matter how you slice it, physical appearance and physical attraction is very important. Now, side note, sidebar, to make it personal to myself, I've never been a person that cared about physical appearance. I've kind of just always been drawn to the person. So looks have never been a big thing of mine. It's always been personality based. And I was blessed with a fine husband. God knew what he was doing, and I'm thankful for that. But it was just never something that was a priority to me. But we can't, as a older, more seasoned woman, I met my husband when I was 20, 21 or something like that. We've been together a really long time. But as a seasoned woman, I now kind of understand the importance of physical attraction. It's what connects you, but yet physical attraction can really grow, even if you're not attracted. And so they seem to be attracted to each other right off the bat at the beginning. But a couple episodes in, on the honeymoon, she makes a comment that she's not really into gingers, and because he's a redheaded guy. And she's like, I'm not really into gingers or redheads. I don't really get along with them. I'm not attracted to them. And you are that. So, yeah, So she made that little comment, and I really thought it was like sneak dissing, right? I really felt like it was sneak dissing. She was basically saying, yeah, you're not my type, in a sort of, she tried to be classy with it. That's not what actually happened. So fast forward to, I think, an episode later, they're in the group, and I think he didn't acknowledge that really what she said hurt his feelings or hurt his ego. And I think most men, just don't know how to acknowledge those things, but I don't think he acknowledged that he actually felt a way. At least that's not what they showed. And so they have this joint conversation with the group of people, and he makes reference that, I'm typically attracted to more slender, athletic women. And when I tell you, it blew the spot up, it blew the spot up. Them women who are more, some of the other women are more curvier women, and just took offense to his comment. And what I want to talk about is, for one, they didn't see the comment that she made. For two, why is it, like I said, with physical attraction really being a priority, why is it that women can make the comments that Gina made, and other women can say, oh, I don't want this, I don't want that? But the minute a man says, which physical attraction goes both ways, the minute a man says, yeah, I'm not really attracted to you or your type or that, he is like, they ready to crucify the man and hang him to the cross. Like, they ready to just condemn the man, cancel culture. It like he's so wrong for stating his opinion. I just, it's like that meme or that sound bite that's going around. It's okay when they do it, but it's a problem when I do it, right? She said it first. She said that she wasn't attracted to him, right? But then now she's feeling slighted, and it could really kind of shifted their dynamic because he made that statement. And I don't know. Like, I think that it's so one-sided. I think we're a women-centered culture. And we've been that way for a little while now, where women are just held at this regard because they're women, and women are supposed to be treated with grace and love. And dare a man say, hey, you could do better in that area? Dare a man say, yeah, I don't like that you do that? Dare a man say, I'm not attracted to you? What's the age-old saying? Happy wife, happy life. I mean, how long have we been in this culture where women are regarded, but they can't, like, they can't say, men can't say what they want and their preferences? Men are highly visual creatures. Men learn visually. They are appeased, they are satisfied, they are satiated through visual. That's just how their brain works, right? They are, yeah, sexually stimulated through visual images. So I'm just trying to understand why, maybe you guys can chime in and weigh on this thing. Why doesn't he get to say what he wants? So that's my first thing I want to bring up. Now this next one, Dominique and McKinley, it's another couple. So she is a 25-year-old young lady, and I think he's like 34, McKinley. And they were matched. I can't remember maybe why they were matched, but long story short, They were on the honeymoon, and McKinley is not. Yeah, that's why they were matched, I believe. Dominique is more daring, outgoing. McKinley is very introverted. And the hope of matching them was that Dominique could bring that out of McKinley. And we'll call him Mac for short, because that's what they were calling him on the show, too. So, and I think he seemed open to the idea. And I agree. I think he did complain quite a bit on the honeymoon, on their excursions and things of that nature. But it was new to him, right? And again, it goes back to that piece. They don't have the patience for each other yet. Marriage takes patience. The Bible talks about love being patient, love being kind, love being long suffering, right? Those are all things that really marriage requires. And again, when you don't have the patience, for that, it's like, yeah, no, I'm not waiting. And so, she just wasn't patient enough with him. And I think they kind of painted it like, oh, she's 25, she's an old soul, she's very mature for her age. And I think what transpired is really indicative, right? That age, you really can't be older than your age. The brain stops maturing at 26, right? It stops growing at 26. So our brains grow, and really the culmination of our brains, and like the I guess more open part of our brains, they say, starts between 0 to 5, but I believe it goes higher than that. I believe statistics have shown, some studies have shown, that the brain actually, particularly for other children and children with disabilities, their brains actually expand, and that period of time is actually extended past 5. But anyhow, the brain grows all the way to 26. Maturity takes a long time. There's a lot of things that come with being mature. That is experience, that is your upbringing, that is responsibility. There are a lot of grown people that still live with their mama, that still live with their parents, and they not they 45, right? So I think it's important to note, because I think they were putting a lot of emphasis on her maturity, but what ultimately ended up happening shows she's actually not that mature. She's only as mature as 25, if that makes sense. So basically her thing is like, I don't like complainers. I don't like someone who just doesn't take life by the horns. I think that, he just does a lot of complaining, and I just think that, I don't won't tolerate it. And he apologized, like, thank you for getting me open, but it's new to me. And she just was like, over it. I find that to be so annoying, really. I think what I want to highlight out of this particular story is emotional intelligence and maturity. You have to really be emotionally intelligent, again, to partake in a marriage, and just in general, to be able to handle certain situations. They ultimately end up getting divorced because she just was like, he's just so negative. He's just so negative, and I don't like those type of people in my space. And so I think what I believe she suffers from is something called toxic positivity. Verywellmind.com puts it like this. Toxic positivity is the belief that no matter how dire or difficult a situation is, people should maintain a positive mindset. Sounds right. Sounds good, right? Well, what happens is, and they go on to say, while there are benefits to being optimistic and engaging in positive thinking, toxic positivity rejects all difficult emotions in favor of a cheerful, and often falsely positive facade. So it fails to acknowledge people's emotions. It fails to acknowledge people's reality. It is sort of like denial, minimizing, and outright invalidating the authentic human emotional experience. That's just it's and I read somewhere else too, it's almost like a form of gaslighting because it minimizes the experience that someone is having. And I think that is what she was doing there. She kept telling him, like, well, stop complaining, just do it. It's affecting me. She was very stoic, and it's indicative of a person who doesn't have emotional intelligence, who's not able to read the room, but she's so quote unquote mature, right? I believe she was doing a lot of projecting. She was trying to dictate his decisions. And I love that Pastor Cal pointed out, like, if he doesn't want to do things or he changes his mind, so what? So what? So what? Like, and I think it was upsetting really to watch because it's like, yo, you can't control and dictate people's emotions and their decisions and what they want to do and kind of gaslight. I think she was really gaslighting and she really thought that she knew what she was talking about, but that was just that 25-year-old immaturity, I believe. I really believe it was very immature. And it made me really think, a lot of these people, this is an extreme process to get married at first sight, sight unseen, without ever seeing, knowing these people's families. I initially said, I really think that some of these people are undateable. My husband corrected me and said, it's not that they're actually undateable. They have a problem and a hard time with dating. Right. And then you take this very intense accelerated process and it just convolutes things because they have a very some of the couples have a very skewed ideology or idea of commitment. Now, they revealed at the beginning of this season the sort of quote unquote success rate. I don't know what successes they're counting. It's been 16 seasons, 4 to 5 couples per season. And if my math serves me right, so let's see, let's just say 4 couples times 16 seasons, that's 64 couples, right? And they said that only 13 have stayed married and are still married. Them odds is bad. Them odds is bad. Them odds is bad. Bad, 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 bad. So, I think you have to really go into this with a different mindset. And it just makes me think too about going back to, if I can, right? Gina and Clint. Gina didn't want to move in with Clint after the whole comment situation. And again, you jump into marriage at first sight, and now you want to get funny about moving in. It makes me think about something my pastor always talks about, where like society so convolutes the idea of marriage. Just like all of this fun and sexual prowess and all of these things that happen before marriage, and then you get in marriage and it's like twice a month, right, lady? You got married at first sight. You got married at first sight. And now you don't want to move in. It's hard for one, too. I can't imagine being in that situation. So let's just say that, right? I don't want to minimize. I don't want to gaslight and minimize what this process is, right? I just don't want to minimize that, but I think really, long story short, Dominique is very emotionally immature and really emotionally repressed. Like her emotions, she doesn't check in with herself, she doesn't check in with others, she doesn't read the room to be able to make decisions. And I will say too, there was something that, like, after her mom, Dominique's mom, found out that they were getting divorce, I think she pussyfooted with her. She didn't want to tell her the truth about her actions, and she was trying to sort of like dictator mom, like no, like I can't tolerate that. You know me, right? Like, yeah, no. No, you need to tell your daughter. And the reality is, it's like, where did she get this idea to have to be so positive? Trauma is real. Trauma is real. Trauma is real. And Max says something very pivotal too. The back and forth game is a young man's game. When you don't know what you want to do with your life, that's what you do. And he had never judged her up until that point for her age. But like he said, it's a back and forth game. And her mom, I don't think, is acknowledging what she should be doing, nor really, like I said, I always look at the root. Like, why are you like that? Why are you having to be so positive? What is she running from? Who taught her how to emotionally handle things? And that's the reality, right? I often say, and if you listen to enough of these podcasts for you returning people, I always say, there's enough trauma on Ayanla. Like, there's enough baggage to unpack on Ayanla. That's why she had many, many seasons herself, because, you know, it's trauma out here. And I think that it's just embedded down in us. And I think when we hear trauma, we think about these big moments, these big things, these kind of like, you know, drastic things. But trauma can be so much as not getting hugged, or not being told I love you, or not spending quality time, or judgmental comments. And you know, so trauma runs very, very deep. And I think, mama, you need to check in with that. And then I want to point out too, there's another couple on there, Eris, and I forgot the other girl name. I forgot his wife name. But and I get it. His cousin was so pressed about him doing this, and so pressed about him doing it. And she was like, man, we can get up out of here if this ain't what you want to do. Like, I don't think you're making a good decision. And then she was like, well, you know, I'm not coming to the housewarming and all of this. Again, there's so much emotional depth in these shows. And again, it's an accelerated process. So it's just really just an observation. And really want to take a moment to acknowledge how deep these processes really are. But there's so much emotional baggage to unpack when you watch Married at First Sight. The cousin was so just engulfed into her cousin's decision. Like, lady, chill. You cannot make that decision for him. She was very, very, very upset. But I think what we try to do is we try to project, right? We project the situation or how we feel onto others, and want them to cope and babysit our emotions. We want them to be like coddle us for their decisions, right? I remember reading, I forgot what it was. I remember reading, give me one second, I'm actually looking it up now. There was something that I read, like how we just want to try to like dictate people's things because of our own emotions, right? And so, like I said, we basically want people to coddle the things that we want. It really brings me back to an experience that I recently had, a situation where someone made a decision that I just didn't agree with. I just didn't think it was a good decision. And initially I was like, just, you know, like, okay, oh well, like, you know, like that's a stupid decision, I don't agree. But I had to be slapped into reality that I can't control other people's decisions. I can only control mine. And because I wasn't ready, I was able, you know, I probably should have said, you know, hey, I'm just not ready for that. And it doesn't have anything to, and even that statement is kind of like trying to manage other people's emotions. I'm not ready for your decisions. I don't have to be ready for your decisions. It is not my like job, right? And with that, the person did decide to draw a distance from me, so I understand. But at the end of the day, I had to check my thoughts because it's that decision we really put too much emphasis. And I think when people withdraw like that too, they feel uncomfortable and defensive about their own decisions anyway. So it becomes a threat, but I think it's just a lack of maturity on both parts. So when people retreat because people's opinions are different, then it's like it's a lack of maturity, emotional maturity, because we can't be responsible for other people's decisions or emotions. We cannot dictate what other people do. So I wanted to point that out too. I think that the cousin really got some stuff to unpack. And she really needs to address the fact that, yo, this is not your life. And I know you are emotionally invested. This is your loved one, but yo, chill, 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 chill. So, I've talked y'all ear off at this point. Y'all know where y'all at. It's long-winded and gifted. So that's how I be. So I hope that of all things, right? Out of those examples, those three couples where I highlight these emotional moments, I hope that you can learn that at the end of the day, emotional maturity is so vital to our lives. That's why I really push the social emotional learning in kids and in young schools and even in adults, because we learn to manage our own emotions. We learn to move about in this world. I often say to my kids, you got to get a healthy relationship with no. You got to be able to say it, you got to be able to hear it. And that's a part of me just trying to build their emotional maturity, because life will throw you things, and oftentimes we make emotional decisions. I actually just heard another quote on the Bible verse of the day on the story where it talked about I forgot his name, Adam somebody. Emotions are awesome servants, but they're terrible leaders, terrible dictators. We let our emotions really run wild and wonder why, we have so much to unpack, because we just kind of skate through life without ever addressing our emotional needs. And we want people to, we have a similar pairing, we drawn to people who have similar trauma bonds and different experiences. And so we make these emotional decisions based off of that without ever checking our emotions. And I think we like to think we're really emotionally mature, myself included. But it takes work. It takes work to be emotionally mature. So I suggest my word of the day for you is to acknowledge something that needs to be addressed in yourself. Take a look. Introspection is real. Introspection is real, but there's growth there. Take a moment to really look at yourself. Take a moment to say, I know it's that thing that I do that is a trip. I'm a trip. So let me address what's mine instead of trying to micromanage and address everybody else. That's ultimately what these three couples have experienced, right? We try to dictate what other people do when we really can only dictate our own. And so take the time today to honor your own emotions. It's so important. It's so vital. Emotional intelligence is very important, and have open and honest questions about it. It does take a form of courage to be able to look at yourself in the mirror and say, yo, I do that. I'm a trip. Yeah, I be all up in other folks' business. Yeah, I be trying to like manipulate that little manipulation thing I do. Yeah, I do that. So take that time. Other than that, yo, it's been real. I hope you guys enjoy my Married at First Sight recap. I can't wait to get an update on the next ep, or I can't wait to, I guess share my two cents on the next episode, and see what comes of it. And this is just my little recap. Spoiler alert. I know I probably should put that at the beginning. Spoiler alert. I hope you learned something. I hope you enjoyed my talking. This episode wasn't even supposed to be this long, but you know. Do I gotta say it again? Mm-mm. I ain't gotta say it again. Y'all be easy.